Thanks everybody for coming. We have a really interesting discussion to have, and I want to keep it conversational. So please, if you have any questions during it, raise your hand, or feel free to throw it out. My name is Chris Galley. I'm the managing partner of Spark Digital. We're an application development firm working in the media and entertainment industry, and I wanted to bring two of our clients up here to talk about geolocation and geotargeting. The interesting thing about this group is I think both of your use cases are super different, and one is much more sort of a micro use case of geotargeting and geolocation, the other much more macro and high level. So I'm going to start by asking you guys to introduce yourselves, your roles, and we'll take it from there.
Thanks, Chris. My name is Ryan Bohr. I am VP of Technology at Fox Digital Consumer Group. And my role and what my team does is build all the back-end APIs and the back-end systems for the video streaming platforms for Fox, formerly for FX and then Geo, for Fox Sports. And the part for geotargeting for us, it really comes down to, I mean, I'm sure you're all familiar with like television rights. And so a lot of our geotargeting is making sure that you're getting the right programming and that you're restricted to the programming that you need, especially when it comes in terms of like sporting content. Because if you're in Los Angeles, you should be blacked out when you're supposed to be blacked out for a Major League Baseball game or football or whatever it might be. So that's the majority of what we do is we after your location to make sure that you're getting the right programming for your local, wherever you're located.
So that's why when I was just out of the country and with the Game of Thrones finale and I go and open up my HBO Now app and I can't get the content. My name is Justin Kahn. I am the Executive Director of Global Retail, Experience, and Tourist Technology over at Warner Brothers. And I basically head up all of our technology around our physical businesses where we have a face-to-face relationship with our customers. For us, geolocation is down to the most micro level where we're looking at delivering content to you when you're a foot or two away from us, as opposed to looking at where we are on a global scale. So we'll dive into that a little bit as well.
Thank you, guys. So we'll start with Brian. Brian, when we were chatting the other day about this talk, you explained something to me that I never heard before, which is couch and hotel rights. Maybe you can walk us through what that means and how to use geolocation to enforce that.
Sure. So it's funny, when we were talking, I brought it up and I kind of said that this is something everybody knew because I've been in the media companies for too long. But couch rights and hotel rights, so basically it's pretty simple. Couch rights are going to be based on your billing zip code. So some of the sporting the sports leagues are, we have rights based on your billing location. I believe, like baseball, so even if I'm watching my phone, if I have a Fox account and I'm watching, but I've moved over to, you know, I've taken the phone with me on a train or an airplane and I'm in New York, I still am going to get restricted based on the fact that I build in Los Angeles. Football has more of a hotel rights plan, so it's based on where you are located, so it's temporary. So it's if I'm in New York, I'm going to get New York programming as opposed to Los Angeles programming. And so that's something we spend a lot of time paying attention to. We go into, you know, have lots of meetings with lawyers and stuff to make sure that we're following those rules, because those agreements for the sports contracts are very specific in which way those rights have to be outlined.
Interesting. So I was thinking about the complexity of this. It sounds fairly simple when you think of it in those terms. But you know, if you're traveling or you know, the example we were talking about where, you know, you get on the train in Philadelphia, and you're watching a game or a piece of content on your way to New York, does it shut off in the middle of it if you don't have rights? Or, you know, what happens in that situation?
So there are, as if with anything, there's always these weird edge cases that come up, and we spend, as an engineering team, we spend a lot of time on that. The train example, we had a, this is when I was at Disney, we had an executive who lived in Philadelphia but would commute into New York, and he wanted to make sure he got the right programming as he was traveling on the train. And so it's one of those things where you're building for your executives sometimes, because there's not very many people who are actually going to care about that or really notice it, but when an executive does, then you spend a lot of time as an engineer building that functionality. We you know, some of it comes down to, it often comes down to, like, your best, you know, the contracts aren't very specific in this, and so it comes down to making the best effort you can. So we often will check every 5 minutes or at the beginning of the program to make sure you're in the right place, and then change the programming based on that. We always try to follow the rules as close as we can, but, you know, we don't necessarily want to drain your phone and checking your GPS location every minute just to find out whether you're still watching the program that you were watching. So it gets complicated, and then, you know, when you talk about, like, DMAs, your market areas for your affiliates, there's also weird edge cases there where some places, there actually overlaps. Like, generally, they're supposed to be one-to-one. If you're in Los Angeles, you only get one affiliate, but there are some places in the U.S. where there's kind of overlaps, and it really comes down to your exact location on which affiliate you get.
The last question for you on this use case, besides rights enforcement, have you encountered any other applications for geolocation, specifically within the Fox Now OTT world?
So we definitely have started to use it more for ad serving. So ad serving comes into that. We sell the ads based on where your location is. And then on top of that, we've started to, as we, I'm sure all of us are familiar with, collecting a lot more data than we used to collect. We're always collecting people's location, and we started to use that information to help steer recommendations or to market to people better. There's some other applications that come into place, like, if you're buying a subscription for us, then making sure that you guys, the customer is not sharing passwords with too many different people, is checking people's geolocation to make sure, like, okay, wait, there's 5 different users using this at the exact same time, and they're all spread around the United States, and that seems like it might be suspicious. So there are certain use cases where that might be true, but we can start to restrict based on that.
Thanks for your password, Dan. Cool. Justin, I was wondering if you could just walk us through the application, the studio tour application, and sort of tell us how you use geotargeting in a much different way there.
Absolutely. So we created a companion app to the studio tour over in Hollywood. And we were looking at ways to bring more context to what guests were experiencing when they came and visited the tour. So we experimented with a bunch of different technologies. We ended up settling on low-power Bluetooth and utilizing beacons to deliver content in location-specific areas for the guests. It was a really interesting experience in developing this application, because at first we felt like kids in a candy store where, oh, we've got this amazing little gadgets that we can play with, and we were placing beacons every 2 or 3 feet. So you're sitting and walking around an experience, and there's a new piece of content, and there's a new piece of content. Well, we learned really quickly that just because you can do it doesn't mean that you should, and started tapering back on it so that we could really give guests a great experience when they come to new areas as to what it is that they're going to see, and then to also deliver some of the film content. For example, if they're seeing a costume, that they can actually see the scenes where that costume appeared.
This microphone thing. I wonder what were the technical challenges? I don't know how many in this audience are on the technical side of things, but you know, I don't think a lot of people know still what a beacon is and some of the potential pitfalls that you might encounter when working with them.
That's a fantastic question. So Bluetooth beacons are these tiny little battery devices. Batteries last anywhere from 2 to 5 years. That all they do is ping out a signal. And you build an application that when it hears the signal, it can deliver the contents to it. The problem with beacons is that there is no real standardization. There are a couple of the primary protocols. So Apple has a protocol called the iBeacon. Google has a protocol called Eddystone. And then the different beacon manufacturers also have their own proprietary protocols, some to do things that others don't. One of the problems was, as I mentioned earlier, when we were trying to be overly aggressive in placing out the beacons, was cross-signaling and fine-tuning the beacons so that it would only trigger when you were 1 foot or 2 foot or 3 foot away. The problem with some of these settings is that even though you could tune down the beacons to nothing, some phones would pick up the signal 50 feet away. Some folks, you could slam them on the beacons and they still weren't triggering the content. So getting a consistent experience was something else that we wanted to do, because you don't want one guest standing there and go, hey, look what just came up on my phone, and the other two standing next to it saying it's not working for me. So we ended up actually going with one of the proprietary protocols, which solved some issues early on in the project and created new ones later on, because you ended up being tied to that manufacturer, their technology, and really tied to their platforms, not able to play around and be as agile as you like.
Interesting. It seems like the trade-off here is that from a user perspective, I can walk around the studio tour and learn more about, you know, I have a better experience. What does Warner get in return? In order, you know, it seems to me like this is obviously one of those data collection things too, where there must be a benefit for your business to know what I did.
So on that front for us, at the most basic level, we know what content was triggered and how many times that content was triggered. So we can actually see dwell times, for example, when we're building exhibits, how long is a guest standing in front of an area where there's a beacon or a trigger, which are the areas, because we're basically, and as I mentioned earlier, we wanted to try and use it at all different places on the tour. We ended up focusing just on the self-guided portion. Our tour is very tour guide driven. When you're sitting on the cart, it's about facing forward and listening to what the tour guide has to say. So when we were walking around in the self-guided areas, we wanted to know which exhibits were working, which exhibits weren't, how are people pathing through a location. We actually did another use case with beacons, a little bit different to the technology with beacons, where we were doing heat mapping in our retail stores, for example, where if a guest walked in with any type of a device that was a radio device, be it a cell phone, be it a smartwatch, it would create an anonymous profile, so not tied to that specific guest, but we could actually watch everywhere where they had gone through a retail space. And we can see people who've gone to location A go to location C, and then plan accordingly. That data is really, really valuable. The other thing as well is, once we have consent, and we can talk about privacy and that a little bit later on if we've got the time, but once we've got consent, on the studio tour, for example, we can also start seeing what kind of content the guests are actually interested in and can customize the experience for them. Because we're a studio that has 100 years of history, one location on the tour is different things to different people. When I go on the tour, I'm all interested about Batman, DC, what's going on in that world, and my wife is interested in the Gilmore Girls, and we're looking at the exact same location. Well, now we can actually start customizing the type of content that we deliver to our guests based on their areas of interest.
Yeah, privacy is where I'm going. So yeah, the last part of this, I think, before we take some questions and eat lunch, is you know, I dated that both of your use cases are collected. You know, what do you as technologists or innovators have to think about in terms of everything from how you're storing it to, you know, the implications of the legal side of things? You know, how often are you dealing with that on a daily basis?
I mean, from the data side of collecting it and storing it, it's never gotten easier to store all the information, and the data storage is really cheap. So I think the challenge is maybe parsing through all that information, but even that's getting cheaper with things like machine learning and other opportunities that you can use to parse through all that data. I think from the legal side, to be honest, there aren't a lot of rules about it in terms of how much of it you can store once you've gotten the consent from the user to allow you to track them. It's pretty incredible what you can find out. I mean, if you just think that there was an article the other day about Google Maps and basically they could see for where this person went, every store they went to, whether they went into the store, as Justin was saying, what parts of the store did they go into, and just because they use the Google Maps service, and they probably have it set on their phone to be able to track it even when they're not using the app. So that data could be collected constantly. So not that we do that, and you know, it comes into kind of ethical questions, but still it's the kind of thing that there are lots of these apps that are asking for your location, and we can gather it. And you know, it used to be in the old days when we make somebody fill out a form and say, like, okay, well, you need to give us one more piece of information, and that'll help us. Give us your zip code, and that'll tell us how much, what kind of money, you know, what's your income range. But we don't even need that information anymore, because we can probably track where you go. We can see where you work. We can see, because we can tell what places do you visit often, and we can probably make some educated guesses by what schools the kids go to, how many schools they go to, and all those kind of things. So it's pretty daunting, all that information.
You know, looking at it from the consumer product side, or from the consumer experience, I'd say that life was a lot easier 3-4 years ago when we weren't asking for consent and we could play around and try and figure out what we were doing for privacy. Today we live in a very, very different world, and for us, where location comes in and privacy are around the large areas, GDPR, CCPA that's coming up. So GDPR is, I'm sure, does everyone here know GDPR? I'm sure, yeah, in this room everyone knows GDPR. But for us, where we have, you know, let's say guests coming from Europe that are coming to the tour, even though they're physically here in Hollywood, we have to treat their data as if they are coming from Europe, and they have the same rights to consent with every application, every website that we're doing. Now with CCPA coming in, it's a place we're going to deal with it in terms of California, and we know that this is just the tip of the iceberg. So one of the challenges that we have is we're going to have a whole bunch of different privacy policies that we're going to have to adhere to based on the individual guests. You're going to have a different policy coming from the East Coast than those of us living here in California have. And although in a year's time it's only going to be two of them, there's going to be a lot more of them. And so this is where location really helps us out, because we can treat each person individually based on the rules that apply to them, as opposed to the rules that apply to everybody. Now, of course, we want to go with the most general area so that we treat and we respect everybody's data the same way. But there are the fine little nuances, and we're going to see that especially with CCPA as to what is actually considered personal information. Zip codes, for example, depending on what other information is typed, will become personal information. And it will pose new challenges that we'll have to dive and take a look at.
I have one last question, and I'll ask the audience for some discussion, but, you know, typical future facing question. You know, what do you think the future is? I think from a OTT and location perspective, and same with you from more of a retail and local experience perspective.
I guess in the future, where things are going. Fox is spending a lot of effort on live programming, because live programming kind of sets you apart from a lot of other options that are out there. So I think when you get into live programming, your location and your where you are, it makes a much bigger difference. And so we will keep using that information and trying to give you information that is targeted to you and your locale, because you're going to be more interested in that than something that's just generalized for everybody. So that's kind of what we're doing.
You know, I think it's the same thing from our side in terms of personalization, in terms of the experiences that everybody's used to from a web perspective, actually seeing that in physical spaces. If you could imagine walking into a space and it's knowing that you are a Gryffindor or a Hufflepuff, and giving you an experience to match that. I think there's a lot that's happening there. The other thing, looking at it from a forward-thinking perspective, is the type of technologies like micro-location services not requiring any additional hardware, feeding off of Wi-Fi signals that's around you. I think that's really where I've got a personal interest in seeing what's coming up next.
Is there a consent issue on that one? Sorry, I didn't follow.
There's always a consent issue, and I think that's one of the key things is where can you do something that is completely anonymized, and where can you, if you're going to personalize something, how do you deliver that consent as you're starting in or letting folks know when they're entering the location?
Very real low in the terms of service. Any questions from the audience?
Pardon me if I missed the answer already, but are you able to, I understand geolocation, or smartphones and technology gives you a lot of digital data. Are you able yet to cross-reference the video surveillance in your stores with and like mark time in the video and your video captures to kind of use facial recognition to match that with a consumer reaction and emotion and time for like consumer purchase decisions?
So we don't do any of that as of yet, but the capabilities are definitely there. And that's also where it really gets into going back to the privacy and the areas of consent, and especially when we're looking at the video footage, which is security footage. And if we're using that footage for a purpose other than just security, again, we just have to, you know, we have to make sure that the guests are aware of that. And to your point of, it's not something that can be buried down in terms of service anymore, but it's definitely where it's going. The question is, how, right?
How?